The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lincoln-L Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions, offering comprehensive refuse services for the community of Haines, with curbside pickup to South Hall, composting to recycling, C&D disposal to septic and porta potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road in Haines, open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
Welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about things that matter. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt. And our talking topic is homeschooling. Who benefits? Our guests are Haines Homeschool Coordinator Cheryl Stickler, School Board President Brenda Jones, and parents Scott and Lavina Hansen. We'll check in with Walk and Talk with the Sheldon Museum, and Hey, Who Are You? Introduces us to another community member. This is Talk Around Town. And a good morning to you, Tom Morfitt.
Merry Christmas.
I admit I did put my gloves and my scarf and my boots in a box and put them in the back corner of the closet.
Every week I speak to a guy in Petersburg who prints our paper as I send it off to him. And I said, you know, it's been kind of cold up here, but we're past the last snow. So there you go. Okay. I caused this.
Right. Of course you did. What else did you cause in the last 2 weeks, Tom?
Well, things happen. my favorite thing this week was my favorite story was the chairs, of course, at the at the assembly.
You didn't appreciate the assembly's contribution to tightening the belt?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I loved the discussion on the coffee as well. I love the budget. I love the budget because Larry Mackeson, very famous journalist in Alaska, said, you know, most secrets are open. You know,
but they're right in front of you.
Right in front of you.
You don't see them.
Well, they're right there. You know, the government has all its secrets on paper. You know? You and I, we don't write stuff down that we don't want other people to know. But, you know, the government puts them all on a budget book. You go in there, you go, what's this? That's
right,
coffee.
Well, right.
That's $2,300 for chairs.
And I did not know this, that Dave Barry, he is an assembly member who had been the mayor of the city of Haines and then was on the consolidation committee. Anyway, he says he's been sitting in those same chairs for 15 years. I had no idea. They still seem new to me.
Yeah.
Well, they're only used once a week.
Yeah.
Well, maybe more than once. Mm-hmm.
But Norm says they're terrible.
He said they're not ergonomically modern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of things aren't. I'm going to go check his boat, make sure it's ergonomically correct. Okay.
our big event was going to be Monday, the mother of all Board of Equalization meetings.
What do you mean? You sound like it's past tense.
Well, what happened was the borough, and people need to kind of pay attention to this a little bit this week. The borough decided, rather than try to hear all 420 appeals there at the Board of Equalization
meeting. By the way, how many accounts are there?
How many land
accounts? Yeah, land accounts.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, we didn't dig into how many actual.
Because 400, I would think, would be a pretty high percentage of the number. There's only 900 people that live here.
Yeah.
I mean, 900 families. Households.
Yeah, yeah,
households.
Yeah. But anyway, this is important information for people because I know a lot of people were planning to go. The borough said this week, if the assessor hasn't already talked to you about your appeal. In other words, that's your first place you go. Your first appeal is to the assessor. If you haven't done that already, you don't have to go to the Board of Equalization Monday. There will be a separate. The only appeals they're going to hear Monday are for people of the 30 of the 420 appeals that have already gone to the assessor, and he said, I'm not changing, or I am changing. Mm-hmm. Only those will be heard Monday. There will be another Board of Equalization meeting later because their borough is just starting. I was only done 30 of the 420 so far in terms of that first initial appeal to the assessor.
Bring your sleeping bag.
I thought there were 30 settlements already. There might
right.
have been. I think they did about 100. They've done 190 actual looks at, and 30 have been settled, I thought. Anyways, the number's a little different.
You have opposing information.
Oh, no, I don't know. Tom's right in that there's another Board of Equalization, though.
Yeah, and if you haven't already talked to Jim Canary, the assessor, and either come to a settlement or he has said, I'm not changing it, whatever. Then
it'll be later in the year.
Yeah, you don't have to go Monday. There's one later in
May. Okay. So, don't call us. We'll call you. That's kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And very interesting, they sent a notice out to a bunch of people Mosquito Lake that there was actually some mathematical errors, and I think 120 or something.
It was reported at the assembly meeting also that I thought it was 197 parcels at Chilcat Lake.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah.
Nearly is that what you mean?
Yeah,
Chilcat
near
Lake.
200
okay.
recalculated assessment.
Right.
Recently
at Chilcat,
Chilcat
Lake.
Lake.
Yeah. So those are sitting in your post office box if you haven't picked that up already and you're a property owner at Chilcat Lake. There has been a reassessment of the entire neighborhood, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
All right, Tom. Range wars at Mosquito Lake?
Yeah. There's quite a bit of excitement up there this week. There's been an ongoing issue that on fireworks up there, and it's there's a lodge, a seasonal lodge that operates along the road that it's blasted off fireworks. In the past, there was kind of an agreement on when the fireworks would be blasted off. That broke down. The trooper had to come back. The trooper's apparently been involved up there for a couple of years now, trying to keep the fireworks.
When you say there's an agreement, you mean just a neighborly agreement that, okay, I won't blow anything off after 8 p.m. or something like that?
That's my understanding.
Because there is no planning and zoning there.
Right. There's a state statute that you can't set off fireworks after 10 p.m., according to the mayor yesterday.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we're coming to understand all these different rules. Anyway, the previous agreement according to the Chilcat Valley News this week, the previous agreement on when the fireworks could be blasted off, which was till midnight.
Wow.
Now will be 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Bauer, the man
owner
who has a lodge, mm-hmm. Bruce has said, I don't agree with that. I don't think the state can just change those things. So, that's going on. At the same time, there was a helicopter that landed out there this week, and it was a SEVA pilot who was just stopping to pick up some things he'd left there at the lodge.
That's an alleged.
He had been on contract with SEVA, but he was off his contract.
Right, he was done for the season. He was just stopping to pick up some things for the lodge.
But photographs were taken. It's been reported to me that it was a staged photo shot.
I don't know. Bruce Bauer told me he didn't know the helicopter was going to land, but that's just what he told me.
Yeah. So that kind of added, I think,
fuel to the fire.
Thank you. this is how neighborhoods develop. People back, it used to be back in Mosquito Lake and Chilcat Lake Road. Those neighborhoods were so dispersed in population that everybody could do whatever they wanted. And then once the population density grows, people say, wait a minute, I got a baby that's trying to sleep or da-da, mm-hmm. and then you have rules and you have regulations. You know, people mm-hmm. don't – the government doesn't sit around at night and say, let's think of a new regulation to put on people.
Au contraire, though. I mean, some of us do, and I think that I'm one of those people, and I have for years. And you're right to point that out. It's a fact of life. Those of us who say, hey, you know, we need planning and zoning, I was one of them 10 years ago, you know, that said we got to do this. And it was like, nope, we want to have, you know, open – we don't want any planning and zoning in the borough, the minimum amount. And, of course, Haynes is a bastion – of defense for no planning and zoning, and it has been. That was our title or our privilege for so many years as the only third class borough in the state of Alaska.
Right.
No planning and zoning.
And then the people out Mud Bay wanted it. Then the people out Lutac wanted it. And now eventually people on the highway are going to want some rules because they want to sleep at night.
You know,
it's the course of human history.
But it is interesting. It is, as you said earlier, it's the only way that planning and zoning takes place when there's a collision.
Right.
A collision
of interests, yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah.
In between people.
Yeah, we should emphasize, as a caller just emphasized, that at least talking to the mayor yesterday, it's not illegal to land a helicopter in private land.
No.
As long as it's not violating an FAA regulation of endangering people or property.
Right.
So. I believe there is a restriction at Mud Bay.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
If you have planning and zoning that says no.
Right.
And the community at Mosquito Lake has never rallied and said no.
Never addressed that. So. Yeah, and we should point out that there's another parallel discussion happening about a helipad across the river there on the Chilkat Lake Road. I mean, this helicopters up the valley issue is not going away.
No, it is not. And I know that CBA had applied for a permit to land a helicopter routinely at property at its lake.
Sure.
And the Assembly and the Planning Commission have looked at the possibility of having a helipad further down the road of the Chilkat Lake Road. But the Planning Commission has not supported that yet. So anyway, that's something. It will happen in my lifetime. I'm going to make that prediction. In my lifetime.
You're pretty healthy.
I'm 62. So the next 20 years or so, unless I live as long as my father, and it'll be 30 years from now. But it'll happen. Okay, is that about it, Tom?
Well, I just want to give a big weekend coming up. We've got Spring Fling Friday night. On Saturday, we have the dedication of the new Vets Hall. Sunday, we've got magicians right here in this building.
It's the breaking. It's the groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dedication.
Yeah.
A groundbreaking. And then we have the musicians here Sunday. On Monday, the BOE. And on Tuesday, we have the meeting on what our bear viewing platform out along Chilkoot River should look like.
Okay.
State's come up with four alternatives. Very different. Where would she have parking? La la la.
Which reminds me, I just want to take less than 2 minutes to talk about this. The planning for the what you are calling the Muniplex.
The Muniplex.
So that has been a part of the planning process initiated by the administration for what to do with municipal buildings
facilities,
right? Mm-hmm. And the committee met last week and made a recommendation of some sort.
Yeah, they want a price tag on a combined structure, and that's, I had to bring my cheat sheet here. It's the fire hall, combined fire hall, jail, dispatch, assembly chambers, government offices, and possibly the visitor center. Wow. So.
Well, and tomorrow, just to note, there's the Northern Neighbors Summit, too, in Skagway.
Juneau,
right.
Skagway, Haynes, Whitehorse, elected, like, city councils, borough assemblies
right.
meeting.
Right. That will be fun. I will be there. I will be in Skagway. And
so will
the Spring Fling, did you speak of that?
Spring Fling is Friday.
It's tomorrow.
If you haven't gotten your membership into the fair, that's an opportunity to do that.
Okay.
Julia Scott's big coming out this
debut.
Of the season.
Oh,
she hasn't sung publicly here. Also, Budget Cal tonight. If you're still interested in whether the coffee or the chairs should go into the budget, or what should or what shouldn't, come on down to the Borough Assembly tonight.
Is that at 4:30 or 6:30? Please tell me.
Well, it's
4:30.
Is that what time?
4:30.
Thank you.
4:30.
Thank you, Margaret.
Okay.
Let's just defer to Margaret anyway. All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks,
thank you,
Tom.
Thank you, Deb.
Keep notes. It's been a while since we checked in with the Sheldon Museum, and today we are checking in with the museum's program Walk and Talk, a program that gets you out of the house and into the great outdoors with Scott Pierce, the museum's education coordinator. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Deborah. Good morning. Hi, Margaret. Good morning.
Hello.
So tell us about this program called Walk and Talk. What do you do?
Well, this is an opportunity for you and your best friend to come on a walk and talk and to learn about your neighborhood with your neighbors. It's a joint community adventure with partnering from the library, Toksinuk Watershed Council, the Borough Community Youth Development Program, Lynn Canal Conservation, the Haines School, the Avalanche Safety Program.
Okay.
A lot of people have participated.
Now, you say you and your best friend. I can bring my dog?
Absolutely.
All right. And you can bring the two-legged type also.
You sure can,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The more, the merrier, you know. And we really have found, I think, a lot of things we've done is that in diversity, there's strength. And it's really great to have animals and people as well as people of all ages. It's really wonderful when school groups come and older folks come, and there's a learning that goes across age.
Do when everybody walks at different paces?
Well, there's a core group of folks who come along on the hike, and it seems like just naturally folks kind of gather up at different speeds of walking.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of have folks that come along and kind of keep track of each group. And then I usually go in front, and at a certain point we kind of stop and all gather up again. But we just kind of let people go at their own pace. And we only go really as a group as fast as the slowest walker.
So how long do you walk?
Yeah. Most of our hikes are we leave town around 9 and we're back around noon. So it's just a morning type thing, and so people can go on and do other things in their day as well.
And what's the longest time that you've, or distance, I guess, that you've walked?
Jeez, I don't know. For sure.
For 3 hours?
For about 3 hours, so it's, I'm not sure. However,
okay. Why don't you tell me about some of the places that you've been?
Oh, it's just been great. We've been to the Rapinski Tower. We've been out to Battery Point, to Lily Lake, Jones Point, Yindestucky, Chilcat Village, the old Chilcat Village, Chilcoot Lake, the Glory Hole Road, Rutzebeck Lake, out in Moose Meadows, Chilcat State Park, the Mount Riley Road, Bromley Ridge, out towards Viking Cove, and around the fairgrounds and up behind in the Disc Golf Course up to the hill behind there, overlooking the Jones Point area there.
And when you decide where you're going to go, how do you decide who's going to do the talk?
Right. Well, there's different folks that come along, and from the museum point of view, which is I'm kind of bringing up, I always try to find some sort of historical references to what's going on, or cultural information about the area, or photographs, or old photographs about the area and all. But then there's other folks who come along who know about the geology, for instance, or who know about the flora and the fauna, or the biology. Or I try to find somebody who knows something specifically about the area that we're going to go to.
So it's not just you who does the talking.
No.
It's all shared.
It's all shared, and I'm not really the leader. I'm maybe the coordinator. For sure, it really is a chance to learn about your neighborhood with your neighbor, and to learn about your neighbors as well, to find out, because everybody has...
If they're in shape or not.
everybody is an expert on something or another. If it's
That's
just
very
their,
kind of you.
Their own life,
right.
For sure. So it's nice to have people talk. And for sure, as we all know, sometimes it's tough to get along with everybody. And it's been great on these walks. We have to kind of work together. Take together, as you know, we're all in this together.
We're all in it together.
And that's for me, that's a big part of this hike, is just kind of working together.
How
as
big
a group.
Are the groups generally?
They go from about 8 or 9 people up to when the school kids come to maybe about 30 folks with several dogs at a time. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, great. Okay, before we check out, how do people get word of where you're going, and what are the logistics for joining the group?
Right on. Well, we usually always publish on our museum Facebook page where we're going to be going the next week. Also, there is a email list that you can get on that Cindy Buxton is helping to organize, and her phone number is 766-3802. You can also call us at the museum at 766-2366. And the next walk we're going to do is we're going to have two walks this weekend, both out to Pyramid Island.
Oh, in the low tide.
Yeah, so Saturday is a group of folks that are going to go in the morning. Myself, I'm going to go to the hospice cell, so I'm going to go on Sunday. And so I think we're going to be leaving around 7:30 or 8. Mm-hmm. And, again, hopefully be back by about noon.
And you gather at the museum, or do you gather at the trailhead?
Right. We do it in two different ways. We always meet at the museum. If you're in town, we usually meet about around 8:30 or 9 o'clock. And then if you're living out by the area where we're going, then we just say we'll meet you there about 15
minutes. Well, that's 20, very kind of you.
We try to be kind.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. I think that's a terrific program for people who want to get out and about and learn more about the community, exactly as you said, and about your neighbors.
Absolutely.
Thank
you. You know, you're welcome. The museum has things in there from outside of the community, and it's nice to – from outside the museum itself, so it's nice to go out and see where they – came from.
Sure.
But you can also come down to the museum anytime, and locals are free.
All right. There you have it, Margaret. Today and every public school day in Haines, at least 28 school-age children wake up at home and they stay at home, but they're in school. They're homeschooled. Here today to talk about homeschooling, what it means for students, parents, and the Haynesboro School District is School Principal Cheryl Stickler, School Board President Brenda Jones, and Representative Parents Valina and Scott Hansen, and their daughter,
Anna.
So welcome to all of you. Thank you for showing up today and helping us to have a better understanding. Nobody can see you. Anna's she's shy on the radio. Most people are. I want to explore homeschooling generally and then some of the issues that are specific to the homeschool program in Haines. And in preparation for the show, I talked to several parents who homeschool their kids in Haines. And it really struck me that a common reason that parents choose to homeschool is that they don't want to leave their kids. Mm-hmm. Stephanie Scott, who is, you know, our mayor and a pioneer homeschooling family here in Haines, back in 1984, was interviewed, and she told Sharon Resnick, the reporter at the time, "I'm not ready to give up my children." And I thought that was a really interesting response. Apparently, the lifestyle of homeschooling also is very appealing. So, Scott and Valina, you'll be sharing a mic here. I hope that's all right, and you can figure out how to do that. And you've got a lot of kids. Do you really like having them all at home all day?
Yes, undoubtedly. It's a privilege and a delight to watch them grow and develop in their unique talents and abilities and get to pick and choose the things that delight them most and just enjoy that love of learning that children have.
When I was growing up here in Haines, homeschooling was a lifestyle because parents were off the road system. You know, they lived at Glacier Point or they lived at the end of Mud Bay or they lived up before the Mosquito Lake School was built, or even Chatham, the Cluckmont School. You know, there are a lot of homeschool because it was such an imposition. But I think now it's a lifestyle of choice for a lot of parents. And I don't expect you to speak for every homeschooling parent in the community, but tell me about how you approach it. Is it one of those things where you just get up and let the moment to like inspire you and do what you want to do, or is there structure to it? I mean, what's your life like as a homeschooling parent?
Well, a lot of this has to do with motivation. Why do we want to do what we do? Because it takes an immense amount of effort, as any educator is going to affirm to that. And it takes a piece of your soul, too.
Ooh, you're going to have to tell me about that.
Yeah. I don't know where I picked this up, but this phrase has stuck with me. And that is, education is enculturation. Whoever educates us or our children, you know, adds a little piece of their culture. They become a mentor of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe the parents are primarily responsible for that and responsible for the outcome, even if they delegate it to one or more worthy agency or entities, or we have to do it ourselves. So the day we have to structure that instead of delegating that to someone else who professionally does that, we have to figure out how to do that. And that's probably been one of the bigger challenges. But I think it's
so
there.
We together evaluate our children and we pick what we think are the subjects that they need to be working on through the year. And we do give it some structure. But just like today, you know, 2 days ago, we didn't know we were going to have this educational opportunity to come see how a radio station works. And this child wanted to come learn that. And so here we are taking advantage of the moment.
And what are the other children doing? Because you do have a lot of children.
We do. And their older sister is helping out right now at home while they're getting ready for a Chinese guest tonight for dinner, which is also going to be another educational opportunity.
So that was my question, too. Mm-hmm. Do you see everything as an educational opportunity? I mean, you get your antenna out there pretty soon and you just start
converting
life into education?
Yeah. I think any loving parent who cares for their children does that, whether their children are in the public school or at home. You know, the children that are doing well in school are because their parents are interested in what they're doing and encouraging them and giving them opportunities, helping them enjoy the aspect of learning. Life is full of learning opportunities everywhere.
So when you have several children at home, do you structure it so that, I mean, I have to admit, I have this kind of like Little House on the Prairie picture in my mind, you know, where you've got the teacher standing in the front of the room and all the kids sitting around the kitchen table or something. Is that what it's like?
I'll tell you a typical day for us. And it depends on whether we have a newborn baby or not. Having added a new baby every 2 years for the last 20, that is part of our life. And usually Scott and I have our quiet time in the morning. We're up early, get him off to work during the week. But then as the children get up, I'll get them going on their chores or get them started on their particular schoolwork. And I have
for most people, knowing you have 10 children and you have quiet time, I think they're still dealing with that. let them absorb that,
please. That one. So as each child wakes up, getting them going, get their breakfast, get them on their chores. Some of the children are slow to wake up. They'd rather do something first before they eat breakfast. And so that's kind of a time of morning where I can connect with them each on one-on-one as they come to the kitchen. And then and we have a chore time in the morning. We have animals to tend. We have goats to milk and chickens to tend and dogs and cats to feed. And so there's a busy time where everybody knows there's a chore time. You've got something to do. Get it done. And then typically there's a larger section of the day once that busy part is out of the way where then once they one by one get done with their subjects, then they've got free time. They can check in. Some of them pursue puppets or Legos or all kinds of, and we have so many resources available, the interesting things, like whether it's Magic School Bus or whether it's Blue Planet, or we try to save movies for the quiet time of day during nap time. But and then there's activity time in the afternoon, because typically a lot of our activities are going to be accommodating public school children as well. So then there's ballet or basketball or whatever other activities, swimming. Of course, we do have the homeschool swimming in the morning, which is really convenient once a week. But
so you are
connected. That's a typical day.
So some of your kids or all of your kids are enrolled in the Haynes school homeschool program?
No, actually, we go through IDEA. When we first began, we've been, before we were even married, we talked about the issue of how we were going to educate our children. And because of my own public school experience, I really wanted to take the pain out of education, which for me was peer pressure, and also the pressure from going and doing till you just drop, because there's that pressure of subject after extracurricular activity and college prep and all this, that I really felt like I missed out on loving to live life,
mm-hmm,
because I was so tired from being educated.
Oh, my goodness.
And I wanted something better for our children. And so and with Scott's perspective, coming from a private school education, he wasn't sure that was good, but he was willing to look into it. And after our children started growing and we started getting into it, and I started being a little overwhelmed because I'd never done that before, I said, well, maybe this isn't such a good idea. And he said, no, this is good. We're going to do this.
Well, he was off at work.
No, he comes home every lunch. I forgot about that part. He comes home the last few years. He's had to come home every lunch and help me correct papers and answer questions. Otherwise, I can't do it.
Okay. I have a science engineering background, and so the math and the science, and you know, we find our strengths and we make those happen.
Great. So it's not just walks on the beach and looking at butterflies and stuff like that. I see there's structure, and I do know too that all children that are enrolled in a program do have to pass the state sanctioned tests and exams. And so let's go for a minute to the program that the Haynesboro School District provides. Then, Cheryl, you're the coordinator for the homeschool program along with Lisa Andresen, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Oops, and I got to put your microphone up there. And so how does the Haynesboro School District program work? How do you help parents, or do you help parents to structure the education of their children at home?
Right. One of the primary goals of the HBSD, the Haynesboro School District homeschool program, is to offer this as an option for parents such as the Hansons who would love that opportunity for their children. And so our role is to support that choice and to support the parents to the extent that they need or require, and to be present for them. And so if in our homeschool program, if the father may not have a science engineering background, we do have content specialists who are available to right here in the community who can help with that concept learning.
So you like have a bank of people that are available for assisting the
parents.
And so what you call them and say, you know, I have some parents that need some help. Would you help them?
That would work. Mostly it comes through certifying for high school credit, the homeschool credits, so that because we are an accredited school. And so it goes to the content area specialists. So.
Oh, I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not just community members. Like go talk to Deborah about that. It's like somebody who's on the staff of the Haynesboro School District. Okay. I guess I got myself outside of the school system.
Mm-hmm.
Not all homeschool students in Haynes. And by the way, how many are enrolled in the Haynesboro School District program?
This year we have 10.
10. Okay, I had heard, and the genesis of this particular radio show was that at first I had heard that there were 70 students in Haynes that were being homeschooled, counting all available programs. Then later I heard it was 28. I really don't know, and I guess you really don't know unless we went house to house and found out how many, you know, children there were in town and, you know, where they were getting their education. I don't know. But the other thing that has become kind of come up on my radar, and you, your children, some of them or all of them are enrolled in this IDEA, which is the Interior Distance Education of Alaska. And that's a program that developed out of the Galena School mm-hmm. District. Mm-hmm. Have any of you been to Galena here?
No.
I've been to Galena, believe it or not. I mean, I was really surprised. I mean, it's a outpost on the Yukon River. Mm-hmm. And when I was there in the 80s anyway, it was literally, I mean, smaller than Haines. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and it had an Air Force base there that was no longer, it was decommissioned. And when I heard that this IDEA came out of Galena and it has over 3,800 children mm-hmm. are enrolled as students in the Interior Distance Education of Alaska, I thought, my goodness, it's a phenomenally successful. Scott and Valina, can you tell me why? Why is this a phenomenally successful program?
Well, as best as we can figure, it emerged because there was a need for distance education. There's a need for remote learning. And there were hurdles, and they had to push through the hurdles mm-hmm. to find a way to make it go right. And I think it ended up, you know, there was a lot of leaning on the parents to really make it work, you know, as the general administrators or principal administrators, I guess you could say, of that branch mm-hmm. of the public school, as it were, and the teachers too, and the evaluators, and then the submitters back to the general administration for the record keeping. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what came of that was a product that was tailored to being separated and made it easier for the schooling family to make it work.
I went to the website for IDEA, and it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And have you checked in on that, Cheryl?
Of course,
yeah,
I have.
It's cool. They have these. They actually put their belief statements out mm-hmm. there, which I think mm-hmm. is really interesting. I just wanted to read it. Their first belief statement is committed parents who have a keen understanding of their children's learning styles and needs are capable of selecting appropriate curricular materials to meet each student's individual educational needs. Mm-hmm. A free-flowing exchange of knowledge and ideas among a community of learners is necessary to achieve quality instruction. So in a way, that's kind of a, you know, nod to the importance of, you know, structured education and school districts and that sort of thing. But the best instruction is based upon the individual needs of each student. So they've got their belief system out there. So the other thing that came to mind about the homeschooling programs is kind of like the economics of it. Mm-hmm. Now, admittedly, what was stated, why I started becoming intrigued with this was you started thinking, 28 mm-hmm. students out there that are being homeschooled, and that is not necessarily money that's coming into the school district mm-hmm. to help support the school district programs. And incidentally, some of the parents that I talked to were very mindful of wanting to support the Haines, you know, community school, the public school, and so made the conscious choice mm-hmm. to homeschool through the Haynesboro School District so that the district could receive that. Can you speak to either one of you, Brenda or Cheryl, can you speak to the economics of homeschooling?
Yeah, homeschooling students, for each homeschool student that we have, we receive 80% of the base student allocation to help support that program. Current base student allocation is $5,680. The parents they receive allocations to reimburse them for the materials that they need to purchase. But the funds also help us to support the program, to provide mm-hmm. the content specialist, to provide the support. And they can also take courses at the Haines School if they're enrolled in our homeschool program.
Mm-hmm. And I think some of the most popular ones have to do with the extracurricular, right? I mean, like art and music
right.
and... I don't know if extracurricular, like sports, does that count? Or are you talking
about...
They
can partake in sports
okay.
and other activities.
Okay. So my understanding is that the allotment to parents is $1,800 annually for K through 3, $2,000 for 4 through 8, and $2,200 for 9 to 12. Is that money that goes to the Hainesboro School District then fed back to the parents? Is that the amounts that I was just there? Because
that's the allocation that the parents receive.
Oh, the parents receive that amount of money. Okay.
And then in addition to that, if they choose to enroll in a building-based class, there's no charge for that.
What does that mean, Cheryl?
They want to come in for art or science or English or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Then we can support that without digging into the allocation.
Mm-hmm.
And then and we can take up to 5 building-based classes.
Okay.
Excuse me, 4 building-based classes before then. Yeah, we have to take a look at what we're going to call it. Are we going to call it a homeschool?
Or are they really at school and they're just staying home some of the time?
Right. So
I can understand that.
Yeah.
Sure.
And we're going to be taking a look at that, too, this year. And we have a parent survey that's getting ready to be sent out. And, and then we're going to host a roundtable discussion about, because we'd like feedback on what's working well, what areas can we grow in, mm-hmm. and then also just take a look at what the allocations could be for next year or what that might look like. So that we can give people the information they need to plan.
One of the things that I think the IDEA program with the Galena School is they now have like satellite offices mm-hmm. around the state. There's one in Bethel and Fairbanks and Juneau. Mm-hmm. And also there's a big curriculum fair that's mm-hmm. going on that they have in different communities. And they don't like have on their website a big description of how IDEA, like what the infrastructure is of it. But mm-hmm. I did go and click onto their school board meeting, the minutes of the meeting, and mm-hmm. the staff of the IDEA program was like huge. It was mm-hmm. like 15, 16, you know, teachers engaged. Mm-hmm. Now here in Haines, we have you and Lisa Andresen are identified as the coordinators, and you have full-time jobs doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
So is that one of the things that might be considered, that we could put more money into our homeschool program, meaning dedicated staff? Have we ever had dedicated staff before, and how did that work?
Right. We've had part-time dedicated staff in the past, and we provide a time each day in Mrs. Andreessen's schedule for homeschool duties and communication. And because my job isn't tied to the class schedule per se,
mm-hmm.
I'm available for parents throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I love those times because I get to sit down with our young learners, and they're so excited to share their projects with me and their learning. And it's just echoing a little bit about what the Hansen family was talking about. You know, parents as the first teachers is of the utmost importance. So whether a family decides to homeschool or enroll their children in a public building-based program, we recognize that the parents are the first teachers and the primary teachers of every child mm-hmm. because they are that child's expert.
Mm-hmm.
And we honor that, and we do our very, very best to uphold that and to provide those supports necessary so that they can do the job that they know that their child requires.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably the basis for why the IDEA program became so successful, is they put so much, you know, I actually multiplied out like 3,800 kids by $5,000. And like we're close to a $2 million program, you know, to run that. And then of course you can dedicate a lot of staff time when you're not, you know, when you're not paying for fuel and you're not paying for the cost of retaining the infrastructure of a facility, you know, you probably can do a really great job of education that way. So, Brenda, do you think as a school board member that we should be concerned about community students not choosing the Haines School District for their education?
I think that it's our job to make sure that we service all of the students to the best of our ability and continually strive for improvements.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our perspective, is what are the needs of the children in the community, and how can we serve them better?
Okay, that kind of leads into something I want to raise that's kind of, and I'm not representing the Hansons, but it was stated to me that one of the reasons that a parent wanted to homeschool their kids was because, in her estimation, or maybe she read it, I don't know, but a third to one half of school classroom time is crowd control, that there's so much, you know, behavior issues in the school and in the classroom that so much of the time that could be spent by the teacher on teaching and kids learning is really spent on trying to control behavior issues in the classroom. And so there's two issues there. The parent doesn't want to have their kid exposed to bad behavior and because, you know, bullying issues and all the rest of that. And the other thing is the waste of time. You know, I mean, if your child is wrapped up in, you know, even a half an hour of interrupted learning time because somebody else is being disciplined or whatever. So, I mean, speak to that if you can.
Yeah.
How big of an issue? How real is that?
School environment is a very important concern for everyone, and it's an area that we continually work on, is improving the school environment. The challenges change. Right now, the administration has been working on the PBIS program, Positive Behavior Program, and we've found it to be very effective in the last year. Bullying is a concern that we all have and we all share, and that's something that we continually work on programs, one, to identify, and two, to correct behavior, develop positive behavior, as well as encourage children to advocate on behalf of themselves so that they're not marginalized in those situations. And Cheryl, I'd really like you to speak about the PBIS program that we've put in.
Sure. PBIS is Positive Behavior Intervention Supports, and it's not a program, it's a structure. And so within this structure, we have opportunities to explicitly teach what are the expected behaviors. Just like Mrs. Hansen has expected behaviors when you get up. It's chore time. Well, we have expected behaviors that we explicitly teach. When you walk into the classroom, this is what that looks like. When you're walking in the hallways, this is what that looks like. And then, so we've been keeping track. We have data. We're excited to show the data at the next board meeting because there's a striking positive improvement in our school environment. The number of office referrals has declined dramatically, which means students are spending less time out of class,
mm-hmm.
and their instructional time, their learning time, mm-hmm. is increased.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this was a program that was brought in because people hadn't, like, modeled good behavior before?
Well, it's a way to bring consistency of expectations in a common language.
Oh, okay. Everyone's on the same page.
Yeah.
Reading from the same book or whatever
yes,
it is.
Yes.
Okay. One of the things that I wanted to talk about before we concluded here, which is kind of an issue for me, and that is in a small community, and where Haines is small, there's not that many kids, but when we isolate them or segregate them by not encouraging them to interact. And this was brought to my attention when I was told that a boyfriend of a girl who is enrolled at the Haines School District was not allowed to go to a dance because he was enrolled in IDEA. He was a Galena school student. Mm-hmm. And so he was not allowed to go to the dance and with his girlfriend, who is a school in Hainesville School District. And I started, and the reason was that he wasn't an enrollee. And so you're shaking your head. That's not the case.
No,
okay.
No. We invite students from Klukwan and from the community to our dances for the high school dances. If you would like to bring a guest, there's mm-hmm. a process that you need
okay.
to sign them in. They cannot be 21.
Mm-hmm. I understand that part.
Yeah. And so it's. No, there's a process. So I'm not sure what happened in this
Maybe
instance.
Yeah, okay.
But
okay. But I thought that so even if the 28 or however many children or students that are enrolled in let's say the IDEA program or some others, and there are other programs available in addition to the Haynesboro School District and IDEA, there are other programs. Mm-hmm. And I also understand that you really don't have to have a program at all. You can have your own independent schooling, and you don't need to be engaged in a structured program. But so all student age people in Haynes can attend social functions that are sponsored by the Haynesboro School District.
Right. Okay. We do have a process for the invitations, and we're here to serve, as Brenda was saying, we're here to serve this community's families and their children. So whether they choose to go through IDEA or the Haynesboro School District, we are one community. Mm-hmm. And we are responsible to one another as a community. And so we are not going to shut our doors or shut our hearts or it's not about that. It's about education. And at the end of the day, when we put our heads down, put our heads on our pillows, at the end of the day, we are reflecting as teachers, how did we do with education today? How did my children do today?
Tell me a little bit more about the survey that you have going out into the community. Is that for all parents of students or all people in the community? Who's the survey for?
It's for our homeschool families.
Oh, okay. But how could you, are you planning, or can you survey people who are not your homeschool families to find out why they aren't the Haynesboro School District families? Because I think that would seem key to me, to discover why did they choose a different program and not the Haynesboro School District.
Right, that's an interesting question. And we've talked about different ways to get that information in a way that's respectful of people's choice. Mm-hmm. Because it's not about, I'm going to speak personally here,
okay.
I'm patting my board member's knee here. But for me, it's not about counting all of the children for Haynes, because for me, they already do count for Haynes. But we're just offering. Students from IDEA can come in and take classes with us. Mm-hmm. I believe one of your children.
Yes, we do have one student enrolled quarter time. Because he wanted to have the band experience, and it's been great for him.
Mm-hmm. Music,
even though at a quarter-time allotment, it does put some unusual aspects for the school district, like when he wanted to travel for Music Fest last week, it was up in the air for a long time, whether he was going to actually get to go or not, which I found a little troubling, but I guess they worked through that. Even though we paid for his ticket down and back, he was allowed to go, so that was a relief.
Mm-hmm. So I'd feel remiss if I didn't address this issue that just kind of bubbled up. They always bubble up at the end of the show. Would you welcome a survey from the Haynesboro School District that asks you, like, why haven't you tried us, or did you try us, and what were the problems?
Yeah, we have talked already with someone
Darcy
from the borough.
Darcy Cole,
mm-hmm.
back in
the mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're interested in the same questions. Mm-hmm. You know, how can we make this work, which mm-hmm. is a really good idea.
Right.
And briefly, if I can speak just to that specifically, the IDEA program has such a tailored ability to allow us to build any class for a unique class of interest for our unique talents and abilities amongst our children, that it has been such a good thing for us,
mm-hmm.
whether it's cinematography or home business or fashion design or, you know, some of these unique classes where we can pull together resources and say, here's what we want to study, and the teacher looks at it and says, yeah, that's approved for a half credit or a full credit.
Do you attend the curriculum fairs?
It's too expensive for us to go, but the internet is such a great tool,
okay.
and they provide a computer and an internet connection.
Great. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to close this out right now, but I'm wondering if Anna, I didn't have a spokesperson for the student themselves, but Anna, would you like to just tell us, how do you enjoy being schooled at home?
Yeah.
All right. Do you think that maybe you'd have fun going to school with other children in the big school?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I bet you have fun milking the goats, making yogurt, and and weaving and all the kind, thinking of all the things you can do with a goat, I suppose. Well, I want to thank all of you for showing up today and at least starting the conversation. And I know, Brenda, you have put it on the agenda for the school board to address in a real programmatic way, and I think that's really good. I am really interested in how we can develop a homeschool program where all the kids in the community are in our school district. I guess I'm not saying that that's necessarily the only way to go, but as a borough assembly member, I suppose it is something that intrigues me, you know, like to do the best that we possibly can to have everybody in the community join in. Are there any other comments that anybody would like to make before we close out?
I have two quick things. One is a legislation that's about a year old called the Homeschool Bill that allows, basically, it's a state ordinance that does not limit school sports participation in the high school years. That's an important thing.
Oh, you're right. You'd have to have an awful lot of kids to have your own basketball team.
Meaning any student enrolled in any program can join in their local school district for the sports program starting this July.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. And another short thing is that all the homeschool families that own land do participate by paying property taxes.
Correct.
And probably 50% of the budget is dedicated to the school, something like
that. And not only that a lot of us are also hiring local artists and teachers with our allotment money that we have to spend, whether it's piano lessons or guitar lessons or ballet lessons or art lessons. There's a lot of money coming into the community through our dollars.
You're right. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that in that way. It's just distributed differently.
It is.
Yeah.
Our choice.
Okay. Cheryl, Brenda?
I want to thank you for your interest in this, Deborah.
Sure. Yeah. It's a community situation, I guess. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Listening to Talk Around Town on KHNS. Hey, who are you?
Hi, my name is Claire Floyd, and I'm new in town. I just moved here a few months ago. I spent last summer here as an intern at the American Bald Eagle Foundation, and they didn't get tired of me, so they invited me back.
And you came very happily?
Very happily, yes.
What did you do last year?
Last year, I was working with the birds. I was an intern for raptor handling. And they hired me back on as a graphics illustrator, which is what I really do for a living.
That is so interesting that you're a graphics illustrator of birds or of anything. I mean, obviously now it'll be birds, right?
Yeah, anything pretty much in the natural world. There's so much that's inspiring. And so most of my work ends up being about birds, but, you know, I draw lots of things.
How did you find your way to the American Bald Eagle Foundation?
It was just that internship. I saw it advertised on the internet. And decided to just go crazy, and I hauled off and applied for it and got it.
And where were you when you applied?
I was working in Alabama. Uh-huh. I'm originally from Louisiana, so I'm definitely a Southern girl.
You kind of have that drawl.
A little bit.
But just a little bit. I have heard thicker.
Try to keep it toned down.
So, like, how much of your day do you spend with the birds?
Well, I see them when they come in to do programs, and once in a while I'll introduce, you know, our little screech owl Dylan to some folks. But most of the time I'm working on drawing them or, you know, making pamphlets to explain them to people.
Have you always just been interested in drawing animals, or is it art in general? Like, at home, do you, like, do amazing sculptures in your garage or what?
No. I started drawing when I was a little bit younger, and when I went to school, I got a degree in zoology. So the two kind of merged, and now I draw what I like.
Wow. So Haines must feel like paradise.
This is. It's different. There's a little bit of a learning curve. You know, I had never really seen snow until last November here.
Never seen snow at all.
Period. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I've never seen snow on April 25th either.
Okay, good. I'm glad this isn't normal because I'm not sure I can take this.
The first honest person.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because partly you have to go buy a whole new wardrobe, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, stay cute, but it's hard when you're covered up like this.
I thought you were going to say stay warm.
No,
but
no.
But yeah, you want to stay cute.
I think there's a way to look cute and warm. I'm trying to make it happen.
Oh, all right. Well, that's excellent. So what other kinds of things could we, where will we see you out and about in the community? Other things that you like to do?
Gosh, well, I do. I attend yoga and, you know, you just see me walking around. I try to walk to the store more than drive because the views here are amazing and want to see them as much as I can. Yeah.
Great. And you know our time is up right now. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming, Flora.
Appreciate it.
Great meeting you. Thanks. And that's it for Talk Around Town this week. Thanks to our guests, Tom Morfitt, Cheryl Stickler, Brenda Jones, Scott, and Lavina Hansen, and their daughter, Leanna. And also to Claire Floyd, the newest member of the community. Next edition of Talk Around Town will be right here on this station, KHNS, on May 9th. Stay tuned. This is station KHNS 102.3 FM, Haines, Alaska. The time is 11:01, and we are going to slide right into World Cafe.